It's time on the radio to talk to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. How are we today, Bill?
I'm fine, Howard. Thanks. How are you?
I'm very well. Well, lots of things have happening since we last talked. We've had the coronavirus alive on the stage, and it's almost taken over the topic of Brexit, if I could say so. So really, Bill, let's look at whether this could impact investments, looking perhaps at the world economy and also the investment markets. And especially, Bill, because China plays such a large part in global trade these days, is the lockdown there in parts of China affecting the economy elsewhere?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Anyone listening to this programme, Howard, will be keenly aware of what has happened in the markets over the last few weeks and what has been on the news about the spread of the coronavirus. And of course, in real terms, the numbers are still relatively low compared to the sort of annual death toll from influenza, for example. But there isn't at the moment an antivirus. It is now a pandemic in that it's crossed borders. And of course, it is of concern, particularly in China. As the coronavirus continues to spread, if you like, into the world's countries, the biggest companies have already started painting a pretty bleak picture of broken supply chains and disrupted manufacturing, empty stores and flagging demand for their wares. The problem is the announcements by businesses like MasterCard, Microsoft, Apple and United Airlines. They offer you a kind of a thermometer of how the virus is affecting consumer behaviour and business sentiment. These corporate bulletins, which are issued, are what, if you like, executives of these big companies do in response. And that could determine how much economic damage the outbreak of this virus will cause. I mean, some companies have expressed optimism, and I kind of have a sympathy with that point of view. An optimism that governments will be able to curb the transmission and new infections, and that consumer spending in Europe and North America will largely be unscathed. That is, I think, a risk that, if it comes to pass, will put this coronavirus nonsense to bed. But if executives do see a threat beyond the first 3 months of this year, they may pare their planned investments and even start reducing their workload and workers, and that in turn, of course, will further dampen the economy. Of course, China has become a massive centre of productive capability, providing goods and services. Take Apple phones, for example. Pretty much every item in the Apple iPhone, iPad range made in China at the moment, they're just not working in these workshops that produce these goods because they've been closed to try and cut down on the spread of the virus in China itself. The problem is, of course, now that this virus is outside of China, it's actually spreading faster proportionately outside of China than it is within China. So that, in a sense, is a bit of good news in that despite the fact that this virus appears to have started in China, pretty much without much doubt, I would suggest, they seem to have started a very concentrated program of isolation to try and bring the spread within China under control, which one would hope in turn will stop any further transmission from China. But of course, you've now got the infection running riot in Europe and the United States and other parts of the world.
Yeah, I actually visited Wuhan when I was in China. So it's sort of
it's a very big industrial area.
It is. So you mentioned Italy, Bill. I think in South Korea as well, the outbreaks in the north of Italy in particular. Do you think how quick will that have an impact on the global economy? Hard to predict,
well,
I guess.
It is difficult to predict, but there's no question that if the virus were to continue at the pace that it's grown over the last few weeks, we're likely to see considerable volatility in the markets. Look, it's worth remembering that this isn't the first global economic shock that markets have had in their lifetime. You've only got to go back about 10 or 12 years to understand what happened in 2008, where markets fell by 40% in a very short period of time. And of course, anyone who ran for cover at the point in time at which they had fallen so far because they feared that it may get worse actually jumped ship too quick, and there was a huge V-shaped recovery where, having gone down on the left-hand side of the V, it shot up with pretty much the same speed on the right-hand side of the V over the following 12 months. And of course, in the ensuing 10 years, the markets have performed extraordinarily well. Now, I don't suggest for a moment we're going to have another bull market off the back of a recovery from the decline because of the coronavirus, but I do suggest that, you know, you don't really want to jump ship too soon. You want to keep your eye on the picture that was painted for you at the outset if you're an investor, and stick with what you thought made sense at that time, because this is a short-term hiatus in the markets. But there is no question there is likely to be a further downturn in the market, and anyone really with the courage of their convictions to stay with their original choice of investments are likely to come out of this the winners. The ones that really won't win off the back of this market decline are those that fear forces them to run. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Some say things will improve when the weather gets a bit warmer, but already we see that the global stock markets have been falling.
Yes, they've taken a pretty serious tumble. You know, there isn't any way that one can camouflage the way the markets have performed. You know, the stock market plunges have been, over the recent few weeks, some of the steepest since the financial crisis. And that suggests that, you know, they only fall when people are selling stock. So it suggests that investors are bracing themselves for some more bad news. I mean, you know, the correction in the S&P 500 in the States, for example, showed at the early stages of the coronavirus impact a 10% fall from its market high, which at the most rapid rate ever recorded. And in the middle of that early day sell-off, the analysts at Goldman Sachs, who are, you know, pretty good forecasters for the market, said that they expected that companies making up the S&P 500 would collectively show a very low level of profit growth this year. The bank, that's to say Goldman Sachs, had previously suggested that the growth in the economy of these large companies in the S&P 500 would probably be at about 6% increase over last year. And so there is a major vulnerability for businesses in the United States and Europe, and that is in their increasing reliance on China as a supplier and customer over the last 10 or 20 years, including the fact, of course, that, you know, your earlier question, how about is it affecting China? When you consider flights have been suspended by a number of airlines into China, and we don't yet know. I mean, I've seen massive cancellations of airline flights into places like central northern Italy. British Airways have put a sale for tickets on the web. Why? Because they've had a massive turndown in people wishing to travel. And I'm not sure, in my own view, Howard, without wishing to sound cynical, whether that's because of the outbreak in the overseas country or whether it's because of the risk of someone being on the same aeroplane as you, coughing and spluttering and sending their bugs down the air conditioning system. It's difficult to say. But this early day situation does look a bit like a panic with a small p. I do think it's essential that the markets trim prices in a set of circumstances like this. But we've spoken about this before, Howard, over the last nearly 30 years. Whenever a situation like this arises, the downturn in the markets almost always overshoots reality to protect itself. The markets don't really care about what investors think. They care about protecting themselves. And so the companies who form those markets tend to depress their prices very quickly. Investors run for cover. And those are the guys, as I say, that generally speaking, lose out when things pick up again. And this, you know, this come spring, come the warmer weather, if these forecasts are right, there could be something of a very sharp recovery in the markets. And if you miss that bounce in the markets, because you've taken your funds out of your investment portfolio, you're going to be a long time recovering them.
Yeah. So, Bill, do you think that any market volatility is likely to be short-lived?
That's quite hard to say. I mean, one would hope it would be. It seems to me that the governments and major governments on the planet, you could exclude somewhat rogue economies like Iran and maybe North Korea. You know, those countries, you never really get the facts as they are. But most of the major economies of the world have seen a clear need to put into effect Plan A and even Plan B and Plan C so that they can capture the opportunity for containment, at least, if not to isolate the bug entirely. And of course, you know, the coronavirus outbreak could up resembling a lot of other brief shocks that have landed only glancing blows on companies and the stock market over the years. These would include, of course, the fiscal battles of the previous decade that consumed Washington Wall Street for weeks and weeks at a time. I mean, and recently, you know, some countries, as I say, were predicting that their sales would hold up just fine. Large businesses, Volkswagen, the German auto giant, what did they say? They said they expected deliveries this year to be in line with 2019. Now, that may not represent growth in their sales, but at least it means that there's not a massive decline, as has often been suspected when this was for Apple. Apple said conditions were gradually returning to normal in China. So it feels to me, you know, China is seemingly getting the coronavirus under control. Tim Cook, who heads up Apple's business, told Fox Business when I listened to it just about a week ago that when you look at the parts that are done in China, they have begun reopening factories. So, you know, there's some evidence here that, the capital, the small P panic, might actually have been overshot in terms of the market, and we might find a recovery coming fairly soon.
Well, Bill, we've often discussed how important time is in the market as opposed to timing the markets. And as you've sort of mentioned, really, when you have something rather strange that comes out of the, out of the far left side or something, such as the coronavirus, there is some people have a knee-jerk reaction, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, the COVID-19 virus is frankly, you know, quite a disastrous risk to the health of so many countries around the world, and particularly to older people and people with health defects in old age and even in middle age. But, you know, as I've already tried to explain, and I'm sure that listeners may think I would say this, wouldn't I? But, you know, you shouldn't really try to time the markets. You don't ever want to be a feared, forced seller. You want to be able to take your time in deciding when you come out of the markets and when you go in. I mean, my overriding advice to clients is simply do not panic. It just isn't necessary. At Blevins Frank, for example, we manage the wealth of our clients on a long-term strategic asset allocation basis. And that means that we manage the risk through holding a wide range of different asset classes in the proportions that suit our individual clients' aspirations and objectives. And it is surprising how mature clients have become over the last 10 or 15 years, in the sense that going back to 1987 and, you know, Black Monday and all of that stuff that went on, I remember sleeping on a camp bed in the office with my staff, answering calls that were coming in pretty much round the clock. But in that period, over the last 30 years, most investors have come to realise that when markets fall, there is always an opposite change when markets begin to perform quickly. And it's amazing quite how few clients have actually contacted us to discuss this matter. They're aware of the circumstances, their portfolios are well structured, they're stable in their long-term aspirations, and the portfolio will recover to meet their aspirations in the future as the plan was set up originally with those long-term intentions in mind.
Yeah. So although you generally advise people not to time the markets, as we're looking now that share prices have, you think, perhaps fallen more than they should do in the short term, could this now be a good time for people to invest?
It's surprising. This again shows the maturity of your average investor, in the sense that we have seen an uptick in the number of people considering making new investments because they feel that if markets have fallen by whatever, 10, 15%, that those businesses which represent the top end of the markets are able to sustain themselves through these fairly dramatic falls, to the point at which they're almost certainly going to recover. And if you can buy anything at a 10 or 15% discount, it's generally speaking worth having. So this is a time, if you have excess funds that you may wish to invest, this is a time to talk to someone at Blevins Franks or your financial advisor to make sure that you aren't missing a trick. Fortune favours the brave. It is brave to enter into the markets right now, but you know, we may see further falls, but we may also see a recovery over the next 4, 5, 6 months. And if we do, those people that invest at these discounts are going to be the winners.
So, Bill, finally, how do you set up your clients' portfolios to help them ride out unforecastable events such as this?
We use a system of risk analysis in concert with our clients' information. The client would normally provide to us a raft of information about their personal wealth, about what their aspirations and objectives are, and we would position our report to the client, having used highly sophisticated Oxford University produced risk assessment tests to make sure that when we put the client's portfolio together, we have considered all of the what-ifs. Look, when the market fell during the global economic meltdown of 2008-2009, we realised then that, you know, you've got to have your client's portfolio set up in a manner in which they can continue to take their income at the level they need, and that the loss of capital value, if it's in the major markets, is to be left alone so long as the individual is capable of running their life with the income that they have. And then being patient, as we've already seen, and I go back to 87 again, you can go back to 2008, every time the markets have collapsed in such a dramatic form, the next 12 months, those that hung on to their investments 12 months later were actually in profit. There is no point in panic. Panic costs money. It's no good being fearful. You can be watchful, but if you need comfort, talk to your own personal financial planning wealth manager, and I'm sure they will give you the same kind of advice.
Many thanks, Bill. We'll listen again to you on TRE in the same time next week.